Hey, this is Rebecca Dirks with PremierGuitar.com. We're here with Vernon Reed checking out the rig for Living Colors live shows. And you are known for the Parker Fly here. You've got your signature model on you right now?
Yes. Yes. It's had a few names. I think they call it the Max Fly now. But this is the Vernon Reed model, more or less.
So you have EMGs in these, right?
Yeah, EMGXs, yeah. Cool pickups. EMGXs and I have a Hex pickup.
What is it? Why did you go with the Floyd Rose versus the stock?
Because I used Floyd Roses with my previous guitar, which were Hamer Chaparral, custom Chaparrals.
Let's talk about where the signal goes, because you have the signal split. Hex pickup goes one place and the EMGs go another?
Yeah, basically the switch determines the mixture, right? So when the switch is down, that's all hex pickup. When the switch is up, it's all magnetic. The way the system works is I'm using a VG99, which is like introduced in the mid-2000s, and I'm using this 13-pin cord, and it splits the signal between the hex pickup, which is actually six individual, each string has its own pickup. It's going to the VG99. And the VG99, I'm using a DOD passive mixer. There's a direct guitar out from the back, and I'm using it to mult the guitar signal out. So one of those signals is going to the zoom thing, which is where you're hearing the automatic wah. What you're hearing is only magnetic pickups. The mult is also going into a Guitar Rig Mobile interface. That's Guitar Rig. The signal is also going to this iPad. To explain this, is using an iOS application called Audio Bus. This is Amplitube. So the guitar signal is from the mult. It's going into this iRig interface, which is going into the iPad. Audio Bus allows different audio applications to play with each other. If I could keep pressing the wrong buttons. Okay. And this is an application called Live Effects, which allows you to do all kind of crazy, kind of bit crushing and all kind of cool stuff. So that's happening, right? But also, so what's happening is everything is happening in parallel. So they're not piling up on top of each other. So that's the basic concept, that everything is run in parallel.
And so you're just basically blending the iPad or the guitar rig in using these expression
the
pedals.
Rig, yeah, the guitar rig or the, the zoom. So I'm mainly running this device into the Mesa Boogie Dual Rectos. You know, because even with using modeling, it's really important for me to use tube amps, and I love these amps.
And you're running both of them?
Yeah, running stereo. And then the guitar rig and the zoom are running out of the Lone Star. That's what's going on. And also, I'm sending part of the signal out to this GR20.
So as far as the signal path goes, what's in front of what? You said they're running parallel.
Nothing is actually in front of anything. They're all running. Because when you have everything kind of, when you run everything in series, then you have a lot of signal degradation. And this way I don't have a whole lot of signal degradation because everything is going to a particular source and then that's being amplified. Like the GR20 is going directly into the house, and so is the iPad. They're going direct.
Affecting each other.
So they're not interfering with each other. We also have on this board an M9 by a Line 6.
And what effects are you using in the M9?
Doing a bunch of kind of delay effects. Let me just get something more. So an example. So that's, and I use choruses, phase shifters, ring modulators, a univibe. That's happening with that. And this other pedal is a prototype, which is, it's called the H9 by Eventide. And the main feature of this pedal, well, it's all of the factor pedals, pitch factor, mod factor, delay factor, space, together. And using Bluetooth from the iPad, it's discoverable. Hopefully we'll discover it. That would just be embarrassing. It's connected now. Communicating, device connected. If you look, you see all the parameters move.
So the moving is from the expression pedal.
Yeah, but right now these are wireless. So the other thing that's cool about this thing is that all the algorithms change really fast. Yeah, there's no.
You're just going right through.
Tap, you know what I mean? Tap it and it goes. Which is an incredible advance because consider it, this is just a small foot pedal. When I started working with Eventide, at the H3000s, I had to have a whole switching system in order to use the H3000 because each time it would move from one algorithm or effects block, it would mute the audio and then come back again. And this is like pretty much in real time. And this is a very early iteration of the software. And it's pretty evolutionary, I think.
It seems like you're using kind of different processors for different types of effects. What are you using in the guitar rig for mostly?
Well, okay, so let's look at guitar rig for a second. I'm controlling the program change utilizing the FC300 and the VG99. So the VG99 is kind of pretty much the brain of the system. So it's kind of like, once again, like kind of parallel processing. So what I'm doing is I'm programming sounds that work kind of in concert together. That's the basic idea. I'm also have Ableton Live going. So what I'm doing with the soft step, there's a program in the soft step called Keyworks that allows me to send key commands. Right now it's in a null configuration. That means there's no nonsense going on. I press 5, let's say. I'm activating these channels in Ableton Live. And so it's another kind of for kind of industrial, kind of edgy, kind of tones. And the MIDI implementation with Live is really, really amazing. Very simple to do a lot of. You can do a lot of complex things. Like, I could do like 6 channels and have each string sends out a corresponding channel. So I could say, right now this is all channels, but I could say I only want the sound on the E string and do that. I could have, say, the key command, pick one key, pick 5 channels or 6 channels, and have the 6 channels and each string be on, you know, its own independent channel. So that's the sort of stuff you can do. And you can run audio. One, the little device I have here that's really pretty great is this thing by Sonus. It's an I2M. And it's an audio interface, mono audio interface, but it's also a mono pitch to MIDI converter. So it's like guitar straight in. So I'm using a Molt. I'm going straight out. This is the magnetic pickup out of here into that. It runs mono. But it actually tracks really well for bass sounds, for all kinds of different stuff. So basically, in terms, so I've got real guitar, virtual guitar, guitar synthesis running in parallel processing. That's kind of all what's going on.
It's pretty amazing. It is absolutely the most complex rig I have seen, and I admire you for keeping up with it.
You know, I'm just a tinkerer and I'm a geek. Yeah. And so I'm constantly twiddling and messing with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you've got the newest things out there.
Oh. And a 12-step actually allows you to play chords and voicings and do kind of hold things. Like, since we're playing Vivid, some of the stuff that I do is really subtle, like little bits and pieces in between songs, little bits and pieces. But this really, when I'm doing something with like a project like Freeform Funky Freaks, where it's completely improvised, it's completely nuts all the time, which is kind of like, that's an improvised power trio project I do with Jamaluddin Takuma and Grant Calvin Weston. It's like sort of the R&D, the extreme R&D, for what happens with Living Color in a way. You know, I work out all the nutty stuff.
You push all of this to its limits and then reel it back in.
And then reel it back in a taste. You know, a lot of what we're doing, like the first thing that we do tonight is a Robert Johnson song called A Preaching Blues. And that's like straight ahead, pretty much straight ahead. And so it's, to me, to have the balance between the kind of bizarre palette, but juxtaposed against just, you know, just playing guitar.
You know, which, you have it all at your fingertips and just choose when to use it, basically.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to annoy people with, what is that? What is that thing?
Why are there so many screens?
There's so many screens. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to actually break down all of the little bits and pieces, and I hope we got most of it.
I think you got everything.
Cool.
I think we talked about just about everything. Yeah.
Well, I guess the last couple of questions I usually ask are the least technical ones. So string-wise, what are you using?
I'm using a D'Addario Jazz Rock gauge, 11 to 49, with an unwound 18.
Why is that?
G, unwound G18. Just used to it.
Yeah. And for picks?
For picks, I've been doing a variety of things.
Yes, I heard that it could be anything.
Yeah, I've been doing a bunch of stuff with Dunlop picks, but also there's a prick maker named Chris Broussard. I like his picks a lot. I like the Tech picks. You know, Duguay's. I actually used Duguay's in my time. I like the V picks.
Is that another palette to draw from?
I consider myself a plectrum fetishist.
I guess.
Plectrum fetishist, and I've also started to venture into crafting my own pick line. And so we'll, you know, maybe more on that later on.
Keep our eyes out for that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So I think of picks, plectrums are like golf clubs.
All right.
You know, sometimes a little one, sometimes a larger one, sometimes a little one if you want to play kind of twiddly stuff. Sometimes a larger one for rhythm, you know. Sometimes a point, a sharp point for articulation. Sometimes a round point is great for if you're going to do sweepy stuff, you know. So. Yeah.
And you've got like a little half slide guy going on there.
Yeah. This is a slide that I made. And it fits like that.
Is it like a socket or something?
Yeah. You can see, yeah, it's like, that's me haunting the hallways of Home Depot.
Putting your fingers in all of the bins.
Yeah, you know, putting my fingers in all the bins. This will work nicely if people are backing away from me. That's how it works in my life.
Well, thanks again for taking some time to show us through everything, Vernon.
You know, thank you for checking it out. Checking this iteration of what I'm doing out.
All right. Well, have a great show.
Thank you.
We just got done talking to Vernon.
You did.
And now it's your turn.
Okay.
So we're talking gear. Obviously, I want to talk about and hear all of that, but let's talk about your bass first.
Well, first of all, I am the effect. So for starters, you're looking at the effect. This here is, this is the tool that I use to do some navigational research with. And this is a 1987 custom Spectre bass from the good old Kramer days. The unique thing about this bass is there's no other Spectre bass quite like this. The story goes, and we all like stories, I was working with Mick Jagger at the time. Stuart Spectre had got with Kramer. And at Kramer at that time, Kramer used to always send a limousine to come pick you up and sashay you, drive. Oh, I'm in the limousine. Okay, here, I'm in the limousine. I just came from the studio, Right Track Studios, with Mick Jagger, and I just got a tape of the final mixes of the Primitive Cool record that I did with it. I'll never forget this. So I'm in this limousine. I'm listening to it all on the way down from New York City to Neptune, New Jersey. And the reason why I was going down there was to make this bass. So I'm in the limousine. I'm at the factory. Stuart comes out with this neck, just this one piece going all the way through. And he was like, Doug, I can't make it any thinner. I was trying to have him make the bass neck like a jazz bass neck as opposed to the ones that he has. So it was the first time he was doing it, and he was a little nervous. So he was afraid it was gonna break, plain and simple. He didn't think there was going to be enough tension to happen to complete the actual process. So I was like, Stuart, just shave it down a little bit more. And he would come to the car. I'm listening to the tracks, and he'd just stick this piece of wood through the window. And what about this? I'm like, just a little bit more, you know. But we managed to get it done. And this is the baby right here. So that shaving it down enabled me to have more of a convenience of what I was used to with a, let's just say, a Fender Jazz bass neck profile. So this bass is a one-of-a-kind Spectre bass, very thin. I even had him shave the body down and everything. So if you look at another Spectre bass and pick this up, it's almost like you can tell that it's very unique. So this bass is, I mean, come on, look at that. This is a bass that's been used.
Yeah.
See, now, if you see anybody and they have a guitar and they've been playing for a while, and they don't have something like that, let's make sure you can see with the light. Let's look at that. If they don't have any real grit and the wood is missing,
oh yeah,
they're not playing this. So this is
ground down.
This is you can see the years of it. This is Jeff Beck moving into Mick Jagger, moving into Seal, moving into Madonna, moving into Annie Lennox, moving into Depeche Mode, moving into Living Color. All that is sketched on this lovely bass, and I've had it. I've done everything I can to keep it together. I'm trying to retire it as soon as they make one that's pretty much as close to this. But you can see I've played the tuning heads off of it.
Yeah.
And the reason is, I'm of the mindset if it works and it's going good, use it. So this is a baby of mine. And Stuart told me an interesting story. When he went he went through a few transitions, his logo. At one point, his logo was caught up in litigation. Stuart said he made three basses that had what he thought was the best wood ever. This one, he took one, and one for another guy I just met a year ago has a sister to this bass in England. And what he did was, when it was time to, he was raising money to buy the logo back, so he sold his bass for a lot of money. So this is a priceless bass. This is a one of a kind. He reckons that this is probably one of his most priceless basses he's ever made. That comes from Stewart himself. So that's it. EMG pickups, which I've been using for quite some time. And I'm really just happy with the craftsmanship this bass will be. Hopefully I can pass it down to my kids and next generations and stuff like that. This one here is the seventh fifth string Stewart Spector made, also from the 1987 era. And this was like when people were first starting to make production models of five strings. It was still kind of a new thing. And long story short, they weren't really accustomed to knowing how to use certain paints and stuff like that. So you notice the color here, right? This is the original color.
Oh, wow. So the whole thing was that?
The whole thing was this color. And over time, and because they were just starting to explore using different paints and different ways of, the original bass was this color. From the lights and the heat, and from me playing it, it turned back to this color. Voila. And this bass I used.
A beautiful natural finish.
Now it's got a beautiful natural finish. I used this on many, many, many recordings with the Stones, Mick Jagger, Annie Lennox, Seal, Madonna, all the recordings like that. This is when I work with Trevor Horn in the studio and Erasure and all my English mates over there. This is the bass. If I go in to do a recording, I'll probably pick this one up
so
first.
So you go five string in the studio.
I'll go with the five string now. You know what I mean? Just because of the convenience of being able to hit that low note. But these two are my two go-to basses. Another custom-made four-string fretless from the golden 1987 era of Stewart Spector. I think that was one of his best eras for me as a bassist. And once again, I had him shave the neck down. This one is black, so it didn't, you know, it didn't lose any color or anything. When he first started making basses, they were all black. So this is the first kind of like way he started to, colors he was using when he went to Kramer. But a great, you know, PJ setup. I mean, his electronics and his basses and the craftsmanship is so elite. It's unbelievable. And I'm really happy to have this bass. I've been playing a lot of this lately. So this one, these are the three weapons of choice. Four string, fretted four string, fretless, and the five string is what I've been using.
What do you pull the fretless out for?
Broken Hearts. I play that on that particular composition. And another thing that I try to use, I try to play according to the songs. I try to keep it traditional and reenact what was going on at the moment. So then it helps me get more into character. I believe in trying to understand what was presently stated, learn that dialect before I start bringing another conversation to the table. You know what I mean? I want to listen closely and efficiently. And so I like having the fretless here to be able to explore those frequencies. And when the right song lends itself for it, I'll break it out. So I got that happening. Trace has always been good to me. Based out of the UK, great gear. And I've been using Trace Elliott stuff since 1987.
And so with these ones, are you running them in stereo?
I am indeed.
And what's going on with these cabinets in the middle here?
Well, these are little tweeters and stuff. So they're high end. You can adjust the action. It's like a horn. So you can adjust them in the back with a volume knob. And it's interesting because they used to make a thing called a Bright Box. And that's what I liked about Trace Elliott. They used to make all these little accessories. And it was a rack. It was a box that came up about the size of this here, and it was just like 5 3-inch speakers or something like that. But it was great because it just added enough top naturally, right? So I had it was one of the first systems that I had or was thinking along the range of, let's just say, kind of like a real full range from highs to lows. And you know, you have a lot of companies that put out different configurations. For me, I like the fidelity as well as the low end and everything like that. So I found that these different combinations of having, you know, like the setup I have, you know, four tens and a tweeter in the middle and a 15 gave me enough simple definition that wouldn't overwhelm the stage or, you know, and I could control the actual frequencies with some pedals or how I'm playing a certain style or where I'm dialing it. Certain sounds I'm dialing up, and the amps could duplicate the sounds. And so, because I noticed some amps will have frequencies that are fantastic. And when you try to go outside of those frequencies that, let's just say, maybe more, you know, top heavy or more, even more low, bottom heavy or whatever, I found the things started to sound mushy. And I tried to find a way how to get a system that could be pretty, have a good frequency response.
We have to talk pedals.
You have to talk
before
pedals.
We go. You want to grab your bass and show some sounds?
Let's start over here. Basically, I look at this setup here as like, it's almost like a sound system. I could treat it and I look at it certain ways and I can look at it like it's a synth in a sense. So of a sonic tone. So for example, the way I have this set up here, I'll give you the chain right here. I have a Shure wireless system. It comes out of here and then it goes out of my wireless system into the Sans amp. And then from this point here, I have things that, let's just say, more tonal. A Sans amp, a bass synth. I have the Source Audio, which I just got that the other day. I'll just explain some stuff before I play through it. So I got like this, let's just say my noisier stuff over here, which is more like distortions or drivers or some sort of synth or whatever. That takes place in this quadrant right here. So Sans amp. If I want some distortion, I might hit that. I have the distortion where I can get three different distortions coming out of octave, fuzz, and overdrive, and I can combine all three. So I have that here. Then I move to my bendier stuff. Whammy pedal, wah-wah pedal, so I can bend the notes up and stuff like that. Then after I'm finished bending, I want to be able to phase or filter or flange or stuff like that. So I do that whole processing part here. And then I go back into like these other filters of like bass filters, like an envelope filter or synth wah envelope filters and stuff like that. So I have the noisier stuff here, distortions here, wobbly stuff, wah-wahs and whammies, phasers and flangers, ringworms and stuff like that. Then it goes into a delay scenario. Like for example, I break out a lot of old pedals, things that don't even see anymore. Like this is an old digital sample, and I might use it for one thing, just to sample one note. And people slept in this pedal. And, a lot of times when pedals come out, things were advancing at that time. So I was like, that's a great pedal. So I can go. So I figured out just ways how to, you know, certain pedals have a certain sound. I use that pedal for that vibe. So now I'm into my delays and stuff. So I got a delay set up here. I got a little sampler and I got a delay where I can go like. So I'm using certain pedals. I'll find a certain effect that I like and I'll use it for that. So I like this sampler because I can hit one note. It's only like 800 milliseconds, but I can. Now I can make it come to life by hitting it and then holding it. So I like stuff like that because I can go. So I like pedals that speak and have knobs. Because if it has knobs, I have fingers, I can use it. You know, so I try to stay away from anything too preset. Because every gig and every place you go to is going to be different air, different stage, different wood. And bass translates much different than the guitar. Guitar, you can play a couple notes, you can hear the bass, that's not going to happen. You can't even, it's going to get overshadowed by the drums and high-end stuff. So I found ways how to simply pop holes against dense sound. And what I do for that is just like, for example, I have a device called the slicer, which is great. So let's say Vernon or Will are blasting away and they're going bananas. So I'll start chopping in between the notes so it's popping and pulsing it out. So while they're going crazy, I'm just gonna pulse it and just give you simple pulse. And people aren't used to hearing that sound coming from a bass. They don't know where it's coming from. By the time they even figure out where it's coming from, I've already turned the pedal off. So I play peekaboo with the effects. Nothing's on all the time. So distortions, wobbly whammy, flangers, phasers, ringworm, which is a great pedal. And it's how one pedal feeds another pedal, right? So then I have a Eventide harmonizer, which I love. Now this has been one of my treats lately. I'll do stuff like. But I'll start adding other stuff. So you start to get all these different beautiful. I just use dynamics and frequencies and ranges to be able to express what's going on. So whammy pedal, let's go through some of these pedals real quick, and I'll make it. One of my favorite pedals is the whammy pedal. So you can do stuff like that with that because it's kind of really cool. Like the whammy, I just got this source on it. How the pedals work with each other. So if I'm using a whammy with distortion, so I can get guitar sounds quite simple with just simple distortion on it. I've been experimenting with this Mothership pedal. I think I'm probably one of the only ones that have made any sense with this damn thing yet. So these are a little noisier stuff, but then like a wah-wah is really good for like this. So I like stuff like that just for expression.
What kind of wah is that?
That's a Dunlop wah-wah.
So a regular crybaby?
Yeah, regular crybaby. Then I like the flanges, which is good for. Like that, so you can just, it just colors it up a little bit. Envelope filter, an old DOD envelope filter. They don't even make these anymore, but these are great. I like it because I can get a subsonic super low end. My technique is I don't even let the, I play very light, so I'm not getting the envelope, I'm just getting the frequency of it. Those are the only pedals in the world that give you that frequency. You can look all over the place, $25. You can spend $4,000, $25 if you can find it online. Another one discontinued, the Synthwah. This one always gets people's attention. So if we're at a gig and people are falling asleep, I hit that pedal. Then I'll combine. So it's just understanding the frequencies of what's going on. Other pedals here that I use, I love this ringworm. Put the slicer on it. So my whole thing is space. I like space. I like this. The space between the notes. It's the shape of the notes that defines the player. One of the latest devices I have is this Infinity Looper, which is by Pigtronics. And what I really like about this is it's a device that enables you to actually loop not just in any one particular, like, okay, we got to do a 4-bar loop or 8-bar loop. I can actually loop 32 bars and then have another loop going for 4 bars and stuff like that, which is really good. And what I really like this device is I have it at the end of my chain. So I look at this as almost like a little booster station at the end. By the time I have all these cables coming through here, which I try to keep cool, I boost it up a little bit like a relay station, like a power station. So I'm able to add a little more juice at the back end here, and then so everything's going straight and hot to the DIs. That, and then I'm using these Keith McMillan 12-step pedals, soft step, fantastic. I'm able to run samples and sounds from my laptop, and I have Pro Tools running here, and I'm actually running a program called Sculpture, I believe. And what it does is it's an onboard sampler. So I'm running the Pro Tools program, but there's no sound going in. I'm just using the plugins and stuff like that, just to be able to use it for the sampler and stuff. So I pimped this. I found a way to pimp this out a little bit, but it's good, you know. And like I said, I'm the effect. You can plug all of this stuff. Give me a microphone and a toothpick, and I'm gonna groove somewhere.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, Doug. I appreciate your time.
Hey, always good to see you, baby. See you next year. All right. Thank you.
This is Rebecca Dirks for PremierGuitar.com.